Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, March 9th, 2019, this is the Deep Dive with Rich Fan, part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup of 7 weekly shows, each with different hosts covering different specific topics and themes. The Deep Dive is available Saturdays, and sometimes I'll stream the show as you're hearing live and invite your calls. For more information on the show and the entire Torch Daily Cast lineup, along with links to stream or download the latest episodes, as always, visit our homepage, pwtorchdailycast.com, or search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, or any podcast app you use for podcasts. This week is going to be a little bit of a twofer. We're going to do a traditional preview of Fastlane, and I'm also going to talk a little bit about a three-pack of Kento Miyahara matches I had the pleasure of watching this week as I kind of dove into his work after having appeared on the inimitable Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise. And once I got my feet off the beat, so to speak, and enjoyed the greatness of Miyahara, I needed more. I had a taste for more. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, but also we want to talk to you, so give us a call. Area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Now, like I said, we're going to start a little bit in, more straightforward order. But before that, I'm going to bring on my first caller, and I think I know who it is, Mr. 862 himself. Please state your name and where you're calling from, and welcome back to the Deep Dive.
It's Colin Rich. Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely, Kylan. So what brings you on today, and what questions do you have for me to answer?
Well, the first thing I have for you this week is concerning the WWE Championship match, which is scheduled for Fastlane, and its potential WrestleMania implications.
Okay.
Do you think that, assuming that Kevin Owens does not win the WWE Championship tomorrow at Fastlane, that Vince McMahon will replace replace, not take out Kevin Owens into the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania? Or do you think Vince will be astute enough to ride the recent wave of momentum that Kofi Kingston managed to recapture after his wonderful late October 2009 original WWE Championship push?
Well, I think it's interesting to me that it is 10 years after the fact that he's kind of getting his shot. I think Vince, I'm inclined to say that they've already done, as Wade has mentioned a couple of times, the Kofi Mania, and the fact that they even moved Kevin Owens a month ahead of schedule into this match. I'm inclined to think Kofi's going to get the title match. I'm also foolish enough inclined to think that he might win at WrestleMania. But I think along the way, it might become one of those convoluted, kind of like what people were saying a little bit about Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch and now Charlotte, where it gets a little messed up on the way because Vince has to put his spin on it. So I think rather than it just being Kofi Mania versus Daniel Bryan, I think it's probably going to be a 5 or 6 way. Does that make sense?
Unfortunately, it does. And I say unfortunately because both Daniel Bryan and Kofi are so good on their own that you don't necessarily need to dilute or water down such a prestigious match for such a prestigious title by adding in three or four other individuals to take the eyes and focus off of them.
Yeah, and I figure, as we've seen in the last few years, WrestleMania, around this time of year, it becomes a, this is that time where it's very weird where they decide to get as many people, like give them that little pat on the back and say, hey, you're at a WrestleMania match, pal. And so because of that, I feel like this is just that easy temptation to just get them in there.
My second question for you, Rich.
Uh-oh. Looks like Kylan may have dropped off, so in the interim, while he tries to contact us again, I'm going to talk a little bit about that Fastlane lineup. So, looking at the pre-show, one of the first matches that sticks out to me is the Rey Mysterio versus Andrade singles match, and how ridiculous it is that that is a singles match. I mean, these two have had a really decent feud. The moves, the storyline, Zelina Vega, the whole thing's been a fit. So I'm a little bit annoyed that this is something that we're going to have in the pre-show with minimal fan reaction because no one's going to be there yet and not give them the stage or even wait a month and have that be one of the key WrestleMania matches where you could have a hair versus mask or had they not gone the route with Samoa Joe perhaps having it for the U.S. title. There's a multitude of ways they could have gotten in and out of that where they would have given Andrade and Rey kind of that spotlight that they deserve. Additionally, they threw together the team of the New Day versus Shinsuke and Rusev just because reasons, I guess. I think that's going to be a match where New Day should win and, you know, get one for their buddy Kofi. And doubling back to Rey Mysterio Andrade, I'd say Rey's going to probably pull it out, but, you know, that's going to be something that's to be determined, especially if they're going to have or may not have a WrestleMania match. Moving on, I'm looking at the Revival versus Aleister and Ricochet versus Chad Gable and Bobby Roode in a triple threat for the Raw Tag Team Championship. Having Aleister and Ricochet, one as a tag team and then two bouncing around both brands, has been interesting because they've been able to show their wares against the Bar. They've been able to show their wares against the Revival and individually kind of show off how talented they are, and rightfully so. I would hope that they win here to kind of keep that NXT juice going. And if they don't win, have it in a way where they're not losing between the three teams and have something to kind of say about that, because otherwise, what have we done for the last month? That's really where I'm looking at with that. And speaking of what's been done the last month, you have The Shield versus Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley. Now, this crew versus that crew is kind of weird to me because Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley should be on like their own level, their own like streets, if you will. And then on the other side, The Shield is fine. I mean, like Roman said, this is day, you know, life's not guaranteed. He wanted to get together with his boys for one last ride, and God bless him, do it. But it just, every time I see Baron Corbin, I think of when Cam and I were at Access and how awesome he was there. And then I compare that to how he's been used on the main roster since, and it's like two different people. And so I just don't know what's going to happen there. I assume The Shield's going to win. I know a lot of people have been postulating that it's going to be an opportunity for maybe Dean to turn on them yet again, but who knows? Oh, and it looks like Kylan's back. Kylan, welcome back.
I'm so sorry for that unplanned interruption, Rich. I'm not even sure what happened there, but in case you didn't get my second question, my second question is, why do you think Vince McMahon, in my opinion, and I'm sure in yours, but we know in our colleague Travis Bryant's opinion, made the egregious mistake of placing what could potentially be the sleeper match of the night, Rey Mysterio versus Andrade, onto the Fastlane kickoff pre-show?
That is a good question. I just mentioned that because it boggles my mind. I don't know why. I think they're missing something if they're not going to include that match in the open proper and not in the pre-show. You are sacrificing all that great, not necessarily talent per se, because they are talented guys, but they built up a really good story, and you're just going to throw it on the pre-show where, as people are coming in, they'll kind of tangentially see, oh, hey, a match is on.
Yeah, in my opinion, that is a shameful insult to both guys' talent and a pure indictment of the fact that, as much as most of us hate to admit it, because as Bruce Mitchell rightfully criticizes some of us for believing, some of us believe that Vince McMahon is our father of wrestling, but we need to start realizing that Vince may have lost his ability to know what's best for himself and his company.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I think, and I debate this a lot with Darrell on the East Coast cast and even off it, I think Vince has been a genius and has had great ideas and have changed the face of wrestling, but it doesn't mean that now in the current time, it doesn't mean that he didn't lose his fastball, if that makes sense. It doesn't mean that you have to take everything he says as gospel. And so as you look at the Ronda Rousey case, for instance, in addition to what you were mentioning there with Andrade, you have what is a money match, and now you're just going around having Ronda cuss on YouTube and say wrestling's fake, and it's just weird. It's just really weird. And so I just get a weird vibe about the whole thing.
Yeah, me too. And my final question, at least as far as I planned, this is my final question, but what do you suppose the finish to the Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch match might look like? And how do you suppose that will set up whatever kind of match we end up seeing at WrestleMania?
I think it's going to show up, especially the way she's kind of done what she's done online. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for, I've been banging this drum for a while, so if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. That's a great way to introduce the Four Horsewomen, because if they come down and they beat the tar out of both women and just say, hey, I don't care who I face at WrestleMania, you know, as she said, you know, she's booing the woo and damning the man and no more Mr. Nice B and whatever else. Like, it, whatever she's going to do, at this point, she's kind of put herself in this position where she is just, I don't even know, she's just this thing. And I think Vince likes it, but I don't know if everyone else does. I mean, I know I don't. It's one thing to say, hey, I'm going to prove that I'm the best. I'm going to prove, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's another to come out and say, like, this, all this stuff is fake, and I'm going to prove how fake it is when I really beat everyone.
Yeah, that is just very, very strange. Well, Rich, it was a pleasure to get our verbals. It was a pleasure to be with you again and to get our verbal sea legs back under us here after 3 weeks off, and hopefully I will join you again next week. But if not, as we were discussing earlier, I will be joining you again in the co-host chair in 2 weeks when we discuss top wrestling families and their histories.
That is correct, my friend. So I look forward to that, and hopefully you get to stop by next week as well. If not, enjoy your week, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
I sure will.
Alrighty, y'all. That was, as always, the fun and exciting Kylan, who I'll be seeing when I'm in New York for WrestleMania week, which should be fun. And speaking of WrestleMania, let's talk a little bit about the rest of this Fastlane card, because I think it has some big implications for WrestleMania, despite what I thought, you know, 2 months ago when, you know, we saw the Flair Lynch thing coming. You know, Fastlane's right in the middle. You got that little break, and you're going to figure that there's something that's going to happen that gets, at the time I thought it was going to be Charlotte in. I did not realize it was going to be Becky getting back into the match. But hey, the way things work sometimes. But yeah, looking at the matches, we've already discussed the Revival. We just finished talking about the pre-show matches. Oh, and the Shield. I think, like I said, I think the Shield's going to go on top with maybe Dean doing some shenanigans. But I'm still waiting on the Seth and Dean hug, or having, you know, Dean apologize and kind of make right with the guys before he bounces. But that's me being a softie. Looking at Asuka and Mandy Rose, however, I want Asuka to get revenge and kick her head somewhere into the fifth row. I think this is a match that's going to kind of show where they think Mandy is in the totem pole, so to speak. So, if, you know, I could see them beating Asuka here. I can see Asuka kind of getting kicked to the curb as Mandy kind of ascends, and then Asuka has to either move back to Raw, or stay on SmackDown as the foil that's chasing, and Mandy takes the role of Carmella from last year. I hope that Mandy can rise to the occasion in terms of match quality and making it something that isn't seen as a groan inducer, but, you know, I reserve the right to see that. Moving on, the McMizanins, I guess, Shane and Miz versus the Usos for the Tag Team Championship in the hometown of the Miz. And as we've always known so far in the WWE, when you're in your hometown, bad things happen. I fully expect nothing is going to go right for the Miz, and I think they lose, and it's either going to be a Shane turns on him, or he turns on Shane, or maybe Shane's dad you know, turns on The Miz and Shane's dad's Vince. I'm an idiot, y'all. Maybe Miz's dad turns on Miz and is with Shane, and then it gets into a creepy House of Dolls type situation. But that might be me. That's just me. That might be me projecting. Ultimately, I see the Usos retaining, and I don't know. I was like in the mindset of really not trusting that The Miz would have a happy moment as a face, because they really just want him, I don't know, just as the evil dude. Instead of, you know, letting him be multitudes, because when you watch Miz and Mrs., it's just the worst. And then when you watch not the worst. It's him being awesome, but it's just, I don't know. I'm just weirded out. It's just, I don't get it. I really don't get it. And it's one of those things that, I don't know. It blows my mind with the Usos because of the DUIs and all that other stuff. It just doesn't make sense to me. But what does make sense is using our Amazon account. And so when we come back, I'm going to finish talking Fastlane, switch over to some All Japan, and be right back here on the Deep Dive.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan, part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, which, as always, you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, you name it, we got it. Give us a call, air code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. When we last chatted, I was finishing up talking about the Usos versus Miz and Shane, and how Miz and Mrs. and Shane and now Miz's dad and all the wild stuff just kind of confuses me in terms of who's where doing what. But when you look at what's going on with the situation with the Usos, it's just wild to me. I don't know. I don't understand it. But we can move on to another tag team I don't understand. That's Nia Jax and Tamina. Nia, most recently hopping on the internets to complain that Dave Meltzer was saying things he shouldn't as a reporter, but that's neither here nor there for me. And Tamina Snuka versus the Boston Hug Connection for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. Boston Hug, I think, will retain here, because I think going into WrestleMania weekend, we should see them, in a perfect world, I'd like to see them do Marathon Women role of defending the tag titles against an NXT Women's Tag Team, and then also doing it for a Raw or SmackDown Tag Team, or even bringing up an NXT team to the WrestleMania stage to challenge them. Either way works for me. I think this is going to be pretty straightforward. Boston Hug has kind of been playing by the numbers. They're doing what they do. They kind of went out and scouted. I've seen some reports on Twitter of them at NXT house shows. And so I like the fact that they're traveling champions, and that kind of gives them a little bit of an old school feel to it. And as far as Gump would say, that's all I have to say about that. Moving on, we can talk a little bit about Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens, which Kylan just alluded to in some ways. I think Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens is going to be a match that's kind of the bellwether for what's going to happen at WrestleMania with the WWE title. What's going to be the thing that puts puts that into a weird situation? Because I would like it to be just Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan, but I know that, you know, sometimes Vince McMahon wants to play everybody gets a trophy. And so I don't know where it's going to go. And so because of that, pardon me, my brain stopped working. So because of that, I'm assuming that Owens is going to lose, but by some way where he's out of the picture, or at least in a position where weirdness can kind of abide. I'm assuming that Rowan's going to get involved and maybe they debut a new member. So that way those guys can, or maybe even not a new member, they debut someone or re-debut someone that can kind of sideswipe Kevin and put him in a position where he's going to be out of luck. And now his focus is going to be getting revenge against that person instead of, say, trying to get the WWE Championship. But yeah, I think Bryan retains, and I think he goes up against Kofi at Kofi Mania in a multi-man match. I'd love it for it to be a singles, but looking at the current WrestleMania card, there isn't that one big crazy match, and I could see this being the one big crazy match by way of a ladder match for the WWE Championship, thus putting Daniel Bryan's reign in even more jeopardy. But that is not for me to decide. And finally, we have the man versus the Woo. Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch. If Lynch wins, she's added back to the Women's Championship. If Charlotte wins, we're just out of luck. And so given the way the story's played out, who knows? She could still lose. Becky, I mean, pronouns, pal. Becky could still lose and then wind up in the match by way of a hopscotch tournament with Vince or something. I just don't even know. It's just weird. Really, really weird. And so that's where I'm at. I am on that. Looking at this match, though, I think, as I mentioned with Kylan, I'd love to see it go, say, I don't know, the better part of 10, 15 minutes, and then have a run-in or something with the MMA horsewomen, or MMA NXT horsewomen, I guess now, and have that be the thing that you see. But, you know, I've been ringing that bell for so long that at this point even I don't think it's going to happen. So I'm just going to presume that Becky somehow triumphs, gets her in to disarm her, and moves on to finally face Ronnie and Charlotte at WrestleMania. So with that being said, that's basically my view of Fastlane, a little bit of a abbreviated version. And so now I want to talk a little bit about the Kento Miyahara matches I watched. So first up was Joe Doering versus Kento Miyahara from the All Japan Dream Power Series in 2018. This match was not necessarily the longest match. It was, I want to say, somewhere under 20. But the whole point was Joe Doering was going for the back of Miyahara to prevent the David versus Goliath story to kind of from kicking off too much, because Doering just beat the crap out of him. He just goes after it and he fights back and he fights back and he fights back. And this is like very old school All Japan. Very, if you haven't seen Joe Doering, Joe Doering's a great American wrestler. Came back from cancer. Really cool story. So to see him and see Miyahara kind of go up against each other. Imagine the baby or the dude from I'm gonna put up a picture. He looks like the gassiest baby in the daycare center, only he can drop you on your head 87 times. And Miyahara, God bless him, is just trying to do his best to stay afloat in the streets against this guy. And it is magnificent. I mean, you can find this on All Japan's on-demand site. I'm sure if you Google it, you might find some other ways. But looking at Joe Doering comes in, and he's sporting 89 to 1999, like, pimp jacket, and then the Stan Hansen hat and Texas boots. He just looks like a dude that's going to mess with your world. And so, like I said, they start out, they got a little bit of a this and that as far as moving around the ring. Doering starts to mess with his world, wrecks him. The ref's constantly checking on him because his back is a mess. Every single time he gets a chance to have a comeback, you see Miyahara fall to the ground and he's just selling the back, selling the back, selling the back. He gets dropped outside the ring. You think he's going to have to deal with a count-out loss. Doring hits him with a lariat. And when he hits this dude with this lariat, you have one of the best refs in the history of Japanese wrestling counting. And when he hits 2.9, it's as close to a legit 2.9 as I've seen in years. And one side note, I'm going to hit a little bit of a tag out here. One of the things I enjoyed mostly about this match is the fact that you have refs that are just there. And photographers, and they have the little numbers. It reminds me of when you're watching a soccer match and the seconds are there and the backups, and you're just looking to see what they're doing to warm up. Anyway, we get to the finish of the match. Doring's going for a powerbomb. Miyahara flips out, and then he hits his finish, which, as you know, from going from my last show with the inimitable Alan Cunahan, a.k.a. Alan Forhel, I haven't seen this move before, or at least the way he does it, because when you look at Miyahara, when he hits his last stop, it's just beautiful. It's a thing of beauty. I cannot get over how many times I've seen this thing now, especially this week. And it's just each time the shutdown German suplex gets hit, it's like you have to break down each stage of it. First, it's the horror that they got hit with the hold. Then it's the brief moment of tranquility when you're hanging there. And then it's the acceptance that it's all about to end as he drops you and pins you. And in this case, claims the Triple Crown Championship for, I want to say, the eighth time. Miyahara is good with the knees, but his finisher is just, it's seeing 260, 270-pound dudes slowly get pulled into the air and then slowly bent into a, you know, crossed-arm German. It's just amazing. It's amazing. And so that Power Series match got my heart. And if that got my heart, I definitely want to say that the next match definitely stole my soul a little bit. And that was him versus one of my favorites from NOAH, Naomichi Marufuji, from May of 2018. And so this was Champion Carnival 2018 final. I watched these a little bit out of order, mainly because I was just trying to figure out which match spoke to me most. And so that first Doring match, I saw the time limit and I was like, okay, this seems relatively short. I can watch this on the treadmill or before bed and it's not going to be something that messes with me. This next one, same thing. You got Triple Crown Champion Miyahara against Marufuji, and you got the final working. It's a different story. Instead of the back, it's just these two dudes going to war with each other. And just old school. I mean, for me, looking at the craziness of the last 7 minutes of the match, where they're just going shot for shot for shot for shot. Marufuji's going for subs. He's going for finishes. He's trying to get them locked in. And the ref's just wilding, losing his mind, trying to see if he's going to tap. And then right when you get to the end, you just have these guys like basically half dead. I'm looking at it live now again while we watch. And there was a wrist clutch, cobra clutch suplex, which sounds as ridiculous as I just announced it. It was like a wrist clutch, cobra clutch fisherman, and it was just, it's a lot. It was so convoluted that when he hit it, the ref had to kind of wait for a half tick because he couldn't get the count right. And from there, it was just all Naomichi Marufuji kicks all the time. He falls onto the collapsed body. And no, it's not over. It's not over. And then when we get to the actual finish, Marufuji spikes him with a variant of Emerfusion, and we got ourselves a Champion Carnival winner. And again, 30 minutes, in and out, easy as you like, Bob's your uncle, easy watch. I would recommend this to anyone. If you get a chance, watch it, have fun with it. And then my final match that I watched was from January 3rd of this year. Miyahara versus Kai. And this was New Year's Wars Day 2 in Tokyo. This was one of the matches where people kind of slept on it. My buddy Mike Sempervivi and his buddy Adam did a great job of selling this. So when I had to go back and find that list of matches between Mike and Adam, and then, of course, Alan suggesting it, I had to jump on this one. This was as old school can be, because you had all, you know, including entrances, etc. You got a 50-minute match. And so nothing's better than a 50-minute match. All Japan style. You're going to have guys near death fighting to kill each other. They got the Royal Road treatment. They're fighting. They're fighting through. They're having the strong style. And then ultimately it was 50 minutes with entrance, exit, speeches, etc. But it's about a 35, 38-minute match. The finishing sequence is great, as you have Kai try to roll up a roll-up. You have the jackknife hold get reversed. And then right when Miyahara thinks he's got it back, he catches a super kick party, couple of enziguris. He spams a knee, but Kai no-sells it, brings out the fight, and eats another one. He's about to die. Miyahara's up. He hits him with a lariat. It gets reversed in two. The greatest move ever. But right when you think that the shutdown German suplex is going to hold him, he kicks out. And so now this is the second, if I'm correct by Alan's count here, this is the second time someone's kicked out. So the crowd reaction to the kick out is just shock. People are just enthralled in the front row. As Kai inexorably goes towards his doom, he's reaching for the ropes. He's getting there, and then the shutdown number two occurs, and it's just inevitable. You can see the fatigue on both of the men's faces. You can see how hard Kai's fighting, he does not want to die. Every time I see the breakdown German, I equate it to the Russian woman in The Matrix, where she keeps screaming, "Not like this, not like this." Because you can just feel them as they're getting pulled up. And the best part of this one is Kai is kicking him in the knee as Miyahara has him in it. Kicking him in the knee, kicking. Finally gets dropped on his head. 1, 2, 3. And Miyahara is just down and exhausted and clutching the knee, because he really did have to just absorb some crazy damage to that leg and then keep everything together to hold him down with that 3 count with the bridge. And so good. So again, that was Kento Miyahara versus three opponents: Joe Doering, Kai, and Naomichi Marufuji. I can't recommend them enough. As I try to dive into more of his work, his being Miyahara, again, pronouns, pal, I will be happy to kind of pass them along to you guys. And as this is my return to the world of live radio, I do apologize for some of my little blurbs here. The wife had to go to a function, and I was trying to say goodbye without also messing with the show. So before I wrap things up here, I'm going to see if there's any more callers. I'm going to see if he's free. Hey, D, I know you didn't have your hand up, but I'm about to get out of here, so I wanted to see if there's anything you needed me to cover.
Oh, not really. Just paying attention, going in, listening to what you had to say.
Oh, cool. Now, have you watched any of Kento Miyahara before?
No, I have not. I will in a second. That's why I pulled up YouTube.
Yeah, I like to give money when I can, but I know sometimes money's tight. If you look on YouTube and Daily Motion, they've got a lot. Like, when you watch his bridging suplex, the shutdown German suplex, it is one of the coolest things. Like, I was trying to explain it to a friend of mine at lunch after I went to see Captain Marvel for the third time. The craziness of how every time he does it, you can see the terror on the opponent's face as they realize what's about to happen. And he slowly, like, I've never seen anyone put someone up that slow into a German. It's kind of like how if you look at Gable's German when he does the roll through, only if you just deadlift any dude, no matter the size, like Big E slowly getting put into it, or, you know, Kane. And it's just so crazy, man. It's wild. And he's one of those dudes, especially since I know you watch New Japan. He just had a tag match with against Tanahashi, and that was the first time they've ever wrestled each other. And I hope it's not the last, because I would love for them to have an interpromotional match. But the toughest part is they're both the aces of their company, or one's the end. The other is the current ace of their company, and you really don't want to have a loser there. But it was just so good, man. So good.
I like to see good suplexes, and I like to see a wrestler who uses suplexes all the time. That's one thing that got me into Taz when he came in with his suplexes and stuff like that back in the early ECW days. So nothing like a good suplex.
Oh, yeah, he's good. Now, one thing I will say is a lot of people mention it. He has a move which is the blackout, which is basically his version of the V-trigger. And so he does spice it in, but I think, and I mentioned this when I was on Alan's show, I think when I saw him doing the blackout knees, it was more or less out of nowhere as desperation moves, not necessarily as like a transition move like the way Kenny Omega would do them. And so that made it a little bit different to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, he is big suplex guy. If you ever get definitely that Doring match, Doring is like a Stan Hansen type. Just, he's going to beat the crap out of you. He's going to lariat the crap out of you. Big old American gaijin who's just looking to kill you. Then with the both of the matches between Marufuji and Kai, they're more or less the old school All Japan where you're getting kicked in the head, you're getting dropped on your head, you're getting suplexed, this, that, and the third. I think there'd be, obviously if you look, there's going to be some good matches with him in it. I want to see him definitely wrestle like he did some Noah. And so, you know, that's great. But I would love to see him in New Japan. Like, if they could sneak him into the G1, I would lose my mind, because he's that good. Like, he is a dude that's, what, 89? He's born in 89, so that's 8 years younger than me. He's 29 years old. He's got the whole world ahead of him. And I just hope he just keeps it up, man.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And if he can get in the G1, that would be a new, fresh mix, because I feel like they need a little refresher in it all anyway. You know, I have been talking to you about New Japan lately.
Yeah.
And that scene need a little refreshing, and it's just top of the stuff. So I would like to see something different, different styles, But I'm pretty sure. I'm gonna try to pull up this tag match with him and Tanahashi in it. So I'm gonna see about that one too.
Yeah, that one's Tana's pretty good, because they put Yoshihashi in it. Oh no, I'm sorry, Yoshitatsu, because they wanted to make sure, you know, you had a dude who could take the fall, because you're not gonna have Tanahashi lose, you're not gonna have him lose, and so that was a smart move. But my hope is that in the future, he does get that shot, because him and Tanahashi was like such a tease, man. Like, I just wanted to see more of him. And the more I watch these matches, the more I realize that I've been doing myself a disservice not watching All Japan, because he's just, he's so good. So freaking good.
Now, All Japan is not where they used to be, right? They're not, because when you say Noah is a little bit above
mm-hmm.
All Japan, right now?
I would say they were before they got bought out, but now it's like they're in a rocky spot because new ownership's changing everything up. Like, they got rid of their green motif. Like, that was their, because they were so tied to Misawa, that was their deal, but they got rid of the green mats. So it's all these like little branding things. And then they also lost a little juice when, sadly, when they let Jado book, because Gato was still doing New Japan, but then Jado came over, and his answer for everything was to have Suzuki Gun, like, when in doubt, have Suzuki Gun win. And so that got a little old, because they kept seeing people lose to Suzuki Gun, lose to Suzuki Gun. And then finally it just got, you know, they got them out the paint. And now it's not bad, but it's not where it was. I think All Japan is kind of like just hanging in the cut by itself. And I would hope in the next couple of years they kind of pull it up. But yeah, Miyahara is like, he's an ace of aces. Like, you have a dude like that, there's no way where you should be feeling like you're second to anyone. Now, obviously, New Japan's like the top dog right now, but you put Miyahara against anyone, I think he's going to look like $1 million.
Okay, then. Okay, because I thought so, because, you know, I don't hear too much. I hear people speak on All Japan, but not too much. And plus, you always hear about New Japan, DDT, and then NOAH. So.
Yeah, DDT is great because they have their own niche. Like a buddy of mine, Brian, who covers things for like Up Rocks and things like that, he was telling me about how like they even like vote. They have fans vote on the contenders. So they'll have like an election and like, oh, this person won, so now they're number one contender. And it's not like a gimmick where the office changes it. It's legitimately how they figure out the top wrestler. And they even did that for when DDT comes to America. They had the fans do an election as to who's going to be the wrestlers they bring, which is really cool. So you find kind of like what I hope they do with AEW. Eventually, I'd like them to be, you know, trying to compete with WWE, but in the interim, if you can make yourself a quirky, different promotion, that helps you get those fans and get that respect. Because as we've seen with Impact, if you just try to be an imitation of WWE, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's true. And in this society over here, it's kind of hard to have any two of the same. You got to be one or the other. You either got to be Coke or you got to be Pepsi. One or the other.
Yeah.
You can't be Coke and Coke Zero. it just don't work. Or Coke or New Coke, that's better. Coke or New Coke. You can't be that. So you got to choose which one. And since you on speaking on this, I thought you was going to break up and speak a little bit just because it just happened today and stuff like that. A little of the New Japan Cup and your early thoughts on it so far. Today.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Too.
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to do it. I just didn't want to do it because when I was talking to Kylan, I know the New Japan Cup ain't his thing. And I usually try to keep the rule of, like, if it's going on, I don't want to put someone in a position where they're hearing about it. But with the way it's going to be with, like, 32 people, you got to take that rule and throw it out the window.
Yeah, because it's 12 straight days. It's 12 straight days. Or not straight days, but 12 days in all. And, you know, you got 32 single elimination. I like the feel. I understand why certain people lost. So my upset of two people losing the tag team titles kind of dulled down a little bit because I understand why. So I'm good with that. But I'm feeling the few matches so far. You know, I really want to see who comes out strong. Because, you know, last year they had Zach come out and they made him win strong by the people that he went over. And you got an interesting feel with both sides of the bracket. I'm pretty sure you're probably going to have Okada maybe coming out to one side. But this side over here, I want to know who they're going to have come out, because whoever come out is going to be extremely hot and extremely over. Because the people who he goes over, something that you wouldn't see like on WWE TV, that they'll give somebody a chance like that and pin people cleanly like how you would, like you're going to see in this tournament.
Yeah, and I'm looking on that other side of the bracket. You know, usually in the New Japan Cup, this is the safe place to have a bunch of people catch some losses and kind of get out the paint real quick since it's single elimination. And so I'm looking at either Ibushi, Naito, maybe Sonata. Those would be my three. Because I think Tanahashi's gonna lose somewhere. I think he might even, I'm waiting. Listen, I'm gonna be crazy. I think Tanahashi might sneak a loss to Umino tomorrow.
Well, that could go because, you know, they still telling the story that his body broken down trying to capture that title. And it'll take a little while for him to come back. It's similar to last year almost, so I understand that. I wouldn't be faulted in that. And I kind of figure. Oh, okay. I kind of figure whoever come out of that Naito and Ibushi match is the one who you can signal the winner, especially the line, who all they have to go through once they win that match right there. So,
yeah,
that's who I'm
with you. I think those two, like more than like, I think Sonata's like my dark horse. I think it's Ibushi and Naito. Like, one of those two guys are going to be in there. Just like I'm looking at that first bracket, and it looks like they set up for Will Ospreay to beat up the two big guys before he loses to Okada.
I would say I see him beat Okada.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Just so you can maybe get Okada versus Tanahashi match at MSG. But, yeah, I see, especially if you want to put him over, because they put him over real strong in that match against Jay White. And I like that he come out and he's saying that he's still a junior facing heavyweights. And I love that he say that, and he let everybody know that. So I just feel like they putting him over kind of strong, and the continuation of building him up and that never open weight title along with his ascent in this tournament could be awesome too. So the next time he have a match for it, that'll have big implications for whoever challenged him.
Yeah, similar to what happens during the G1. I guess I would bet whoever beats him is going to get an open weight shot.
Yeah, and I feel like if you're not going to have Okada in the main title picture, maybe even if Will don't beat him, you build up Will so strong and that match so good that maybe Okada get a shot at that never open weight title. I know that sounds blasphemous for certain people if they hear me say that. But you got to have something to do with him, because right now I don't see him in the heavyweight title picture right now, because I see other people who more deserving or better matchup or just a fresher matchup. I wouldn't say deserving, just a fresher matchup that's more interesting right now.
No, that's absolutely fair. I think looking at the way it's looking with New Japan, even going into the G1 supercard at Madison Square Garden, there's so many different people. Like, if it's going to be a person like a Bushi or a Naito or Okada that takes on Jay White, who's going to be in that undercard? Who's going to be that next person that they pull out there that can be in their quest to kind of continue getting into the United States and making the inroads?
Yeah, and I think in this short period of time, they have built Jay White up for that. He don't feel as bad being in that main scene, especially coming over here in the States and just having the power of the Bullet Club behind him, and that kind of propped him up in the States, where over everywhere else, he's over as a heel everywhere else. It's just having that Bullet Club behind him that can prop him up in the States. So when he do get this match in Madison Square Garden, I'm pretty sure he's going to knock it out the park. And that's what's going to signify him as a star for the people over here in the States. It's just who can they build up to make that match feel very important. That's what I see this tournament doing.
Now, outside of the big two we just mentioned, who on that other side of the bracket would you be happy with, and who would you be surprised if they wound up getting the shot?
I'd be happy with Ibushi. I know that you said other than the big two, but I'd be happy with Ibushi. I like someone like Evil. And surprise at a Goto. Surprise at a Goto winner. I don't know how you felt, but the other night when they had and they had all four of the guys in there and they were pointing about, I'm going to be the winner, I'm going to be the winner. I felt kind of weird when Godo was on the mic and he talking about he's going to be the winner. But I understand. I know he always been somebody on the scene. But, you know, it just kind of felt weird then seeing Naito on the outside looking like the, he always looked like the outsider out of everybody. Even now that they shining a spotlight on Ibushi, my guy Naito always seemed like the outsider. That's why I hope he don't win. I hope he don't win. I hope he get eliminated first and he don't win, because I feel like his story is better told going up, winning the G1, keeping the IC title, and going to the Dome, Tokyo Dome show, and probably winning right there.
Now, before I get out of here, do you think there's anyone that because right now you see they're doing the job of like getting the young guys over and putting people in positions where they can kind of replace the Bucks, replace Cody, replace Kenny Omega, and they've done a good job with Jay White particularly. I look at Toa Hinare. They, you know, they tried to give him a little burn before his match. Chase Owens beating Juice Robinson. Is there anyone
man.
That... Yeah, that's wild to me. That was the wildest one, to be honest.
I kind of felt that. If you were going to say, do anyone do I feel fresh and new about or feel good upon who they're trying to put in that spot, Chase would be the guy. Because lately, he's been doing good with his promos, his matches. I've been watching him when he was doing the tags with the Tokyo Pimp. And, you know, you can see it in his eyes that a lot's changed. And like somebody getting in his ear and telling him, hey, man, all you got to do is this, and we're gonna push you. And there's something about when you hear other people, especially behind the scenes and power, start telling you, like, hey, we want you to do it, but you got to prove it to us. And now he's out there showing. And like you said, that match, it was a surprise. And I think he could probably – you could probably have him upset Juice right now and take that title. And if they do it at MSG, and that would be nice. And I think him winning that title and the performances that he has been putting on till he get that title would be a star-making moment for him. And that could be somebody who immediately will replace one of those guys and who people can grow with, because you're seeing him win that title, and I feel like they got to do a rebuild with Juice after that G1 of last year, him not winning and stuff like that, then the quick loss to Cody and all the other stuff that with it. So I feel like Chase is the guy that you can start something with, and then you can promote him to the people over here and have them grow with him. Plus, he in the Bullet Club also. That never hurts to help your profile. And just let's see what he do with it. Give him the ball, let him run with it a little bit and see what he do with it and see how it comes. Because like the boy said, you're going to have a Tennessee ass whooping or something like that.
Yeah.
I felt like that was an awesome line. How he said and he still had the mouthpiece in his mouth. Like, come on, let's go. You're going to get this Tennessee ass whooping. And he came out and he gave you a Tennessee ass whooping. And I think that should be something different, too, that we don't always see the chicken shit here. Excuse my language. My bad. I'm sorry. The chicken ass heel. And we have a heel who say, well, I'm going to come out and I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to beat you up and I'm going to take your belt. I'm going to beat you and then I'm going to be the contender. And then when I get you in that match, I'm going to beat you again. Because it's been so many years of having those other type of heels that seeing somebody like him who's new, fresh, and who people ain't expecting, and he being a different type of heel, and he's saying this, and he going out and proving it, it feels refreshing, and it feels more to somebody like him since he's new, and it's alluring. It makes him more alluring to want to come see him.
Yeah, when you were talking about him and getting that Tennessee butt whipping, all I could think of is Aqib Talib ripping off Michael Crabtree's chain.
Yeah,
and then how
I remember that.
It. Yeah, like that's basically what he did. I'm going to snatch your chain, I'm going to take your title, and I'm going to do it again. I'd like to see you stop me.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Somebody even older, Gary Payton, went see back in his own Supersonic days and how he would talk trash to you, tell you he's going to talk trash to you before the game, come out and do it, get in your hand, and then he show you why I'm the glove and come out and rip you and then score on you and do it again two more times and keep talking to you. Sort of like that right
yeah.
there.
I like it. I like it a lot, and I like that idea. I like, you know, for me, I'd always seen Chase as kind of like that backup guy in the Bullet Club. Like, if this was a group, like a rap group, he's the dude who has to get the one track where he's doing a solo just because he's in the group and you promised him to get it. But he's running with the ball, man. And I'm looking forward to his match coming up against, I think it's Yoshihashi, which should be another one he could win. I mean, shoot, I'd be happy to see him beat Yoshihashi and then have to go up against, like, an Ishii. That would be a heck of a match for him in the quarterfinals.
And that will be a test. You could say that could be a test to
yeah.
see how he can hang and hang with the ball. Because Ishii have great matches with a lot of people. And he, if he can pull out and have not even a great match, don't put that much expectation on him, but have a match that everybody's intrigued in and watching, that would be awesome for him. And a lot of people come from the background to be stars. Another rap comparison would be Lil Wayne was a backup until they gave him the ball to run with it.
Yeah, you're right. I'm actually going to put that in my notes and comparing Chase Owens to Lil Wayne. All right, my man. So let me get out of here. It's been good. I appreciate you answering my unsolicited call, and you enjoy the rest of your weekend.
All right, you too, man.
All right, y'all. That was Darrell from Georgia hopping in because I grabbed him real quick because I saw him on there. I wanted to ask him some stuff, and he wound up bringing me some quality and you all some quality. So always a pleasure having him on. And always a pleasure talking to you guys. At this point, we have reached the end of the journey, so my challenge is to have you dive into something new. Challenge yourself, go plus ultra, if I could speak a little All Might. And next week is going to be a salute to Steve Austin. And when I have 316 week, it's the inimitable D-Palm joining to talk to me about some Austin and all sorts of other things. So in the meantime, enjoy those Miyahara matches. Enjoy New Japan Cup. And enjoy Fastlane because I've enjoyed talking with you. Be good.